What are the stupidest things you've ever heard?
Coach, he wanted proof. I just wanted proof.
How come?
I called you out. I called there you out go. 30 years
Coachman.
Ago when you made it up. You made stuff up, Bill, 30 years ago,
keep
bro.
Keep shouting because you're a fraud.
You're going to sit there and say
you
we haven't
guy.
Told you because maybe you're senile, bro. You reported on stuff that was
don't
never
call me
said,
bro.
I'll call you whatever.
Shut the fuck up.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! I'm home!
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
Don't speak, bitch. Come on now.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No.
I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want!
You know, I cringe whenever I'm live and I hear Brie Mode. In my ear, it sends a shiver down my spine. But I would rather combine the learning tree and Brie Mode and listen to the learning Brie, or tree mode, than have to listen to Vince Russo arguing with Phil Mushnick on a show hosted by Piers Morgan. What seventh circle of hell is this from? It's like the terrible triad. I couldn't stomach more than a few minutes of that interview without wanting to pull a killer Kowalski on Yukon Eric on myself. And if you're too young to get that reference, look it up. Let's talk about something else that's going to take years off my life. My Mets. My Mets have me very nervous, but they're still in it, although they may not be by the time some of you listen to this. Tonight is game 6 of the NLCS. Every game for them from here on out is an elimination game. It's going to take some magic to beat the Dodgers 3 in a row, but that's what they're going to have to do. They want to go to the World Series. They won on Friday. Tonight is game 6, and if necessary, game 7 is Monday night. The Yankees are already in. They won the American League pennant last night, their first in 15 years. Enjoy Juan Soto in pinstripes because he's coming to Queens next season, especially if the Yankees lose. Whatever happens, it's been a very fun, unexpected end to the season. If you followed this team from the beginning of the year, you never would have expected them to make it this far. You would have been calling for them to blow the whole team up and start over again. But when you get this close, you get greedy. And you want them to go all the way. But the Dodgers are a tough team, so we'll see. October baseball, man, there's nothing like it. This is episode 884 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, October 20th, 2024. I am the Solo Monster. First things first, I did not get to watch the entire show last night because I was watching the Yankee game, but Scott D'Amore's new promotion, Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, held its first show last night. And it sounds like it was a big success. I was keeping up through all the clips that they were posting on social media, which in and of itself was very impressive. And I think that that's an important thing, especially for a new promotion that's trying to get the word out, because you want people talking about the show. And I think them posting clips from a lot of the matches is really what got a lot of people talking. So whoever's running their social media, I thought that was a smart strategy. I was keeping up through all of the clips, and I was very impressed with their production. You know, they basically have TNA-level production value, but that's great for a new promotion that's never had a show before. The lighting, the sound, it all looked and sounded really good. Having Mauro Ranallo back on play-by-play was such a great get for D'Amore. It was just so nice to hear Mauro's voice on commentary again. And he had Don Callis with him. And the crown jewel of the Callis family, Kenosuke Takeshita, in the main event against Speedball Mike Bailey. From what I saw of it, they tore it up. And tonight is their second show with Takeshita defending the AEW International title against Josh Alexander. And they even had Mauro promoting the lineup for Dynamite this Wednesday, you know, graphics and all. So I guess maybe that's what Tony Khan got in return for allowing Takeshita to defend the title on their show tonight and having Callis there. And Athena is going to be defending her Ring of Honor Women's Championship tonight against Giselle Shaw. You only get one chance to make a good first impression, and it sounds like they made a great first impression last night. So good for them, good for Scott, and shout out also to Sam Laterna, who did a great job ring announcing. She's also part of our family at House of Glory, and she busts her ass, so it was nice to see her out there doing her thing, even if she did have to breathe in the same air as Bully Ray. Another thing that happened this week, Zack Sabre Jr. is the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion for the first time in his career. He beat Tetsuya Naito this week. It's sad to see Naito's decline the past few years, but he dredged up whatever he had left and had what I thought was a very good match with Sabre. Sabre had won the G1 Climax. Usually the G1 winner gets a title shot at Wrestle Kingdom. He wanted it now so that he could walk into their Royal Quest show in London, which I think was this morning, as the champion against Sonata. And that probably is taking place by now. I don't know. I wouldn't give any spoilers away anyway. It just happened. But that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to walk into his home country with that championship. But the other big news coming out of the show is that Hiroshi Tanahashi, who was celebrating his 25th anniversary in wrestling, has announced his retirement match for the Tokyo Dome on January 4th, 2026. So he is pulling the John Cena, and he is having one final year as his retirement tour before hanging it up for good. And of course, he'll still be involved with the company. He is the president of New Japan. He's been the president since December of last year. That's not going to change unless they get rid of him. That's not going to change. You know, Tanahashi is 47 years old, same age as John Cena. And both of them are clearly shells of what they used to be in the ring. You know, when we had Tanahashi in House of Glory a few months ago, getting the chance to stand there in the back and watch him. And there was nobody around him. I'm just standing there a few feet away and I'm watching as he's getting ready to go out to the ring to make his entrance. That was something special for me. Because I knew, as I was standing there and I'm watching this, I knew I probably would never get the chance to see that ever again. And he went out there and he had a good match. But this is clearly not the Tanahashi of even a few years ago. And it's painful to watch him walk around on those knees, let alone wrestle on them. Tanahashi, though, is somebody who will go down as one of the most important figures in wrestling history. He quite literally saved New Japan Pro Wrestling when he became the ace of the promotion. I mean, it was the dark days of New Japan under Inoki when he had that fascination with shoot fights and he tried to incorporate shoot fighting, MMA stuff into the product. And people just fled in droves. And it wasn't until Tanahashi worked his way up and caught fire as their top star that business turned around and the IWGP title meant something again. It was looked at again as this really big deal. By the time Okada came back from excursion and he started getting over as the Rainmaker, Tanahashi was already their ace. And out of that, we got that legendary Tanahashi-Okada feud, which is one of the all-time great wrestling rivalries. But Tanahashi will absolutely go down as one of the most important figures in the history of that company. And now as president, I mean, I guess the jury is still out on whether or not he can restore New Japan to the heights that it reached several years ago before the pandemic, because they're still struggling. You know, they're still trying to climb out of that hole. But what a sad year it's been. You know, first we had Sting's retirement at Revolution. Then John Cena announced his retirement tour. Bryan Danielson just ended his full-time wrestling career. Now Tanahashi announces his retirement tour. And the only tour Chris Jericho has announced is for Fozzy. His career lives on. It's a sad time. Many thanks to our PayPal producers for this week. If you would like to support the podcast, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You will see the PayPal link at the very top of the page. Thank you to Big B, Brian Pacera, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soap, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Recon Russell Bulware, the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Al-Safar, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, and Killshot Keith Hart. We officially hit 82,000 channel subscribers on YouTube on Friday, so thank you for that. I also posted part one of an exclusive members-only Q&A this week. You guys posted your questions in the thread that I put up, and I answered. It's over an hour long, and that is for channel members only. Now, you've got a part two coming your way this Wednesday. Second part, that's another hour of Q&A that I answered. So, again, if you are a member, keep your eyes peeled for that this week. If you are not a channel member, now would be a good time to become one and try it out and get some of the perks. It was also good seeing some of you, as always, Friday night at the House of Glory show, Salvation, which is up right now on Triller TV+. I got to call my first Masato Tanaka match, and I'm watching this and I'm like, man, That guy is 51 years old. And not the oldest wrestler, you know, to be doing it at that age, but still 51 years old with the wars that he has been in. Like, there's a difference between still wrestling at 51 and wrestling at 51 the kind of style that Masato Tanaka has wrestled over the years. You know, his body's got to be 51 going on 71, but he doesn't move around like it. He looked like he hasn't missed a beat since those wars with Mike Awesome in ECW back in the 90s. He challenged Mike Santana for the HOG world title. We also had a first time ever match with Nick Nemeth, the reigning TNA World Heavyweight Champion, at least for another 6 days. He is defending that title next weekend at Bound for Glory against Joe Hendry. He went one-on-one, first time ever, with El Hijo del Vikingo in Vikingo's first match back on U.S. soil since, I believe, February, when he tore his meniscus and he ruptured a ligament in his knee. He underwent surgery, just came back, and the two of them had a really fun match. Zilla Fatu put his crown jewel title on the line against Real One, the former Enzo Amore. And I even made a cage match, because this just has to end, between Carlos Ramirez and Idris Jackson. That will be at our December show, where the Hardy Boys are making their return to House of Glory. So it was a busy night at the office. Yeah, I heard Booker T talking about, he's mouthing off about Zilla Fatu, who he helped train down in the Reality of Wrestling, talking about him potentially coming to WWE. Don't be coming after my guys, Booker. He's my guy too, okay? He's our crown jewel champion. The only crown jewel champion that matters, for the record. Don't be contract tampering there. I got my eye on you. Some sad news to share. The former chief operating officer for Ring of Honor, when it was still owned and operated by Sinclair Broadcast Group, Joe Koff, passed away on Tuesday at the age of 73 after a long battle with cancer. In August, he made the decision to forego any further treatment so that he could live out the rest of his days comfortably, or as comfortable as possible. You know, many times the side effects of the treatment can be worse than the disease itself. I don't know what type of cancer he had or how advanced it was. It was obviously bad enough that he decided it just wasn't worth it anymore to go through the treatment. Yeah, I mentioned before how Tanahashi is the man who saved New Japan. Well, Joe Koff is the man who saved Ring of Honor. Not once, but twice. He was a big wrestling fan as a kid back when Bruno Sammartino was champion. Kerry Silkin, who sold Ring of Honor to Sinclair, he wrote the following about Koff's death. Very sad to hear about the passing of a good man, Joe Koff, who saved ROH numerous times, the first being the conduit with Sinclair Broadcasting to purchase it from me. People will never know, there were so many times between 2012 and 2022 where Joe kept the company alive. Sinclair Broadcasting did not need it. There were a lot of headaches involved with it, but Joe loved wrestling. He was a kind man. I spent a lot of time with Joe, and not once ever was there a bad moment we got to share. The greatest night of our lives was when Ring of Honor was in Madison Square Garden on April 6th, 2019. Rest in peace, Joe, and thank you for everything you did for pro wrestling. And it's true. You know, he was the man who helped broker the deal between Silkin and Sinclair. Just to give you some background on that, after Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness had announced that they were leaving the promotion at the same time, they were both going to go to WWE, and they were going to wrestle each other on the way out. Silkin was going to shut the whole thing down. You know, he was funding the company by himself. He was losing two of his biggest names, plus, you know, DVD sales, which were a big source of income for them for so long, and for a lot of other indie promotions as well. They kind of lived and died by those DVD sales. They just weren't as strong anymore. They had a television deal with HDNet, which I think was owned by Mark Cuban at the time, but it hadn't done much to increase ticket sales. They lived and died by ticket sales and DVD sales. So it's not like they had guaranteed money coming in for their media rights like WWE does and AEW does right now. So Kerry was going to shut the whole thing down. And I remember, you know, a number of years ago, I don't remember how long ago, but Mike Johnson on PW Insider had a column where he talked about someone calling him and telling him that you have to come to the Manhattan Center. This was the show where Danielson and McGuinness were going to wrestle each other in their final ROH match. And they were doing a show upstairs in the Grand Ballroom at the Manhattan Center. So Johnson hears this and he's like, why? And the person told him, because this is going to be the last show. And they haven't announced that, but Carrie has made the decision to shut the whole thing down after this show. So that would have been Glory by Honor 8, the final countdown. Because Silken was a ticket broker. He had a separate business outside of wrestling that lived, basically, you know, survived based on how well Broadway tickets were selling. And he propped up Ring of Honor for many years off the money that he was making from that business. And it just got to a point where it just wasn't worth it anymore. And then TNA fired Jim Cornette 2 weeks before that Ring of Honor show. And Cornette has said that it was because he wasn't on board with Vince Russo's ideas, you know, so Dixie Carter sided with Russo and got rid of Cornette. And there were a lot of rumors as to what happened, you know, one of them being that Cornette blew up at Russo for wanting to put the TNA world title on Eric Young, who, you know, up until that point was doing mostly comedy stuff. I mean, I know he was a TNA original guy, but that was the rumor that Cornette blew up on him. He didn't see Eric Young as being a world champion. Who knows? But he clearly fell out of favor politically, and Dixie let him go. And this turned out to be very important for Ring of Honor because it led to a conversation between Carrie Silken and Jim Cornette, where Cornette made a deal with him to help find them a sponsor or an investor or a TV partner, something that would help keep the company afloat if Carrie just agreed, don't close down yet. And Carrie backed off. So the people in the building that night in 2009 at that show, they had no idea how close they came to being a part of the final Ring of Honor show. Without Ring of Honor, you know, after 2009, where would the Briscoes have ended up? How different would the careers of Kevin Steen and El Generico have been? You know, would they have gotten the opportunities that they ended up getting working? Yeah, you know, let's say if they had to go work for some other independent promotion. How different would their careers have turned out? Think of all the Ring of Honor stars that Triple H raided for NXT. He built that black and gold brand on the back of a lot of that ROH talent. And those names now, today, are some of the longest tenured big names in WWE. You know, what about Cody and the Young Bucks? That first all-in show in 2018, that doesn't happen without backing from Ring of Honor. And that show is what eventually gave birth to AEW. It was a proof of concept that you could put 10,000 people into an arena for a major show without TV and without being WWE. So Cornette was friends with Gary Juster. Juster used to work for WCW. And Juster had a contact. He had a connection to Sinclair. And that's what got the ball rolling. So in a funny roundabout way, when you really think about it, you could draw a direct line from Jim Cornette and even Dixie Carter, to the birth of AEW, which is funny as all hell. I love stuff like that. It's like Vince McMahon not hiring Jeff Jarrett after WCW went out of business. That's what ultimately led to Jarrett and his father starting TNA, which is still alive today. Or Vince McMahon giving Spike TV the okay to air The Ultimate Fighter after Raw on Monday nights. Because he could have refused it. He had the right to refuse it. They went to him and he said, yeah, that's fine with me. And The Ultimate Fighter is what saved UFC. Now WWE and UFC are both divisions under the same company. But anyway, so they were just hoping to partner with Sinclair. That's really all they were hoping. They may maybe get a TV deal out of it. Sinclair had other ideas. Sinclair decided they wanted to just buy the company outright. And that was because of Joe Koff, who worked for Sinclair, and he knew the value that wrestling could bring. They had something like, I don't know, something like 300 TV stations that they owned all over the country in various markets. Wrestling was cheap and easy programming to just throw up on those stations, so it was Koff who helped broker that deal. And, yeah, I mentioned the first all-in. Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks, they were under contract to ROH at that time. Koff is the one who allowed them to promote that show, independent of Ring of Honor, and not only let them do it, but let them book New Japan talent on the show at a time when ROH had an exclusive deal to use New Japan talent here in the U.S. market. Nobody else could. And I think Ring of Honor helped on the production side as well, which is why they had ownership of the show until Tony Khan bought the promotion, and now Tony owns the footage of the first all-in. Then, you know, you look at when Ring of Honor and New Japan, they sold out Madison Square Garden back in 2019. Carrie Silken said it in his quote. Greatest night of his life, greatest night of their lives, at least professionally, was when they sold out MSG. I wish I wasn't all the way up in the nosebleeds for that show, but I'm glad I was able to be there at all, you know, just to be a part of it, because that was just such a special thing. That's when WWE got MSG to briefly pull out of their scheduled date. They were so shook that somebody else was going to be running Madison Square Garden. Hey, you know, that's our turf. Whoever it was, out of Triple H, could have been somebody else. Somebody from WWE definitely got MSG to pull out of that date. And it was Joe Koff. He was one of the people who fought very hard against that and even threatened to sue over it. And ultimately, MSG backed off and they let them run the show. I still remember sitting there at that, you know, it was the New Japan Ring of Honor G1 Supercard. I remember sitting there and people around me were looking at their phones telling me that Bret Hart just got attacked at the Hall of Fame. I was freaking out trying to figure out what happened. Like, he got attacked. What does that mean? Like, was he stabbed? Is he okay? That's a night I won't forget. But I said he saved the company twice. The second time was when Sinclair sold it to Tony Khan. You know, Koff is the one who helped broker that deal. WWE had an interest in it. Let's be honest. They didn't have an interest in running Ring of Honor. They had an interest in the tape library. They weren't going to keep it alive as a brand. They were going to pick the bones just like they did with WCW, and they were going to shut it down and put it on a shelf. And Joe Koff knew that Tony wanted to keep it alive, and ultimately they sold to Tony Khan. And by the time Sinclair bought the company, whatever year that was, I think the deal went through officially in 2011 or something. By that time, I wasn't going to nearly as many ROH shows as I used to. I would say from 2006 to 2010, maybe, I went to a ton of shows. But the ones that I went to after the sale went through, I always saw, and you'll hear other people say the same thing, I always saw Joe Koff. Like, I knew what he looked like. You would think, oh, he's just a random executive. I don't even know what the guy looks like. I knew what he looked like because he was at every fucking show. He was standing around in the crowd watching the show like a fan. And he was interacting with the fans. He was very approachable. I maybe exchanged all of a few words with him, but he clearly was not just some empty suit who didn't give a shit about wrestling and just wanted to make a quick sale for the company that he worked for. He was a fan. And all the times that people, myself included, would talk about how, you know, Sinclair is not spending enough money to improve the production of the show, or they're not spending enough in other ways, there were stories of Joe Koff fighting for them to get more money and trying to go to bat for a bigger budget, but ultimately it just didn't happen. And that's one of the many things that worked against Ring of Honor in those waning years under Sinclair. It just did not look or feel big league enough to be treated like a big league promotion. Like, it didn't even have the production of an AEW show. But all of the tributes that have poured in for the man this week, you could tell the talent and the people that worked with him thought the world of the guy. And he will definitely go down as one of the more important figures in the history of Ring of Honor. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You know, I'm on YouTube every week, multiple times a week, live streaming to thousands of people. And all you get to see is my face. You don't need to see any other parts of me, but that isn't true for everyone. Some people live stream themselves online even in their most intimate moments. Not me. There's no Solo Monster after dark. But if that's you, imagine going online without ExpressVPN and accidentally sharing some very private moments with the rest of the world. There isn't a rock big enough that you would be able to hide under. And forget the embarrassment of it. There's no telling what kind of implications something like that could have on your career, let alone your personal life. Use ExpressVPN and don't ever take that chance. Because all of your traffic flows through your internet service provider, they know every single website that you visit. And in the US, ISPs are legally allowed to sell that information to advertisers. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers, so your ISP can't see your browsing history. And look, I mean, I'm having fun here, but it doesn't even have to be anything dirty. You know, people search for some weird things online. Maybe you just don't want total strangers to know what that is. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is how easy it is to use. You just fire up the app, you click one button, and you're protected. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. And it hides your IP address, making it extremely difficult for third parties to track your online activity. Whenever I fly somewhere, as I did a couple of different times this year, even just last month on my trip to Chicago for House of Glory, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app loaded up on my phone because it gave me that peace of mind, knowing that I was protected. And that's important to me. I know that my activity and my data is safe and secure. I have enough on my mind to think about any given moment without having to think about that. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Dave Meltzer is reporting that WWE has a date booked for the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, which is the former ECW Arena, with the belief that it is for the November 6th NXT show on the CW network. That is a Wednesday. So I guess they're moving the show to Wednesday that week to avoid Election Day, which means that they're going to be head-to-head again with AEW Dynamite, only this time it is going to be on AEW's turf. It's going to be on Wednesdays instead of Tuesdays. Now, NXT destroyed Dynamite this month when they went head-to-head. Well, they went head-to-head for about an hour, but AEW ran on Tuesday with that Title Tuesday show a few weeks ago, and they were out of their usual night. They were out of their usual time slot. But it would be super embarrassing if WWE moved NXT to their night and then just beat them again. But he is saying that the date is not a sure thing, only that the venue has been booked. Now, the capacity with stage and set, you're probably looking at a crowd somewhere between 1,000 and maybe 1,500 people. That's still more than they get at the PC. I love it. I hope it happens. You know, NXT at the ECW arena for the first time. And I am all for them running these smaller, unique venues like they did in St. Louis a few weeks ago. So I hope it happens. Speaking of NXT, Deadline.com broke the news that Dennis Miller, not that Dennis Miller, Dennis Miller, the president of the CW network, which now airs NXT, stepped down this week. He is no longer the president of the network. Instead, CW president of entertainment, Brad Schwartz, is expected to succeed him. This comes after Miller had just re-upped his contract last year to remain the president of the network through 2027. So I don't know what happened there, but he is out. And this might be an alarming thing normally to read if you are an NXT fan. But Schwartz previously worked for Pop TV, and he helped bring TNA to the network, and he is said to be a big wrestling fan, so this will not have any effect on NXT. And Shinsuke Nakamura has not wrestled a match on WWE television since April. He has been on tons of house shows, lost every single match he's been in, except one. They at least let him win a tag match when they went to Japan over the summer. Well, he is headed back to Japan again, but not for WWE. It's going to be for Pro Wrestling Noah on New Year's Day. He's going to be wrestling Ulka Sasaki, a former UFC fighter who only debuted in pro wrestling 11 months ago. Nakamura last wrestled for Noah on their New Year's show 2 years ago. That was when he wrestled the great Muta in one of Muta's final matches. So for those of you wondering what the hell's going on with Nakamura, is he hurt? What's going on? No, he's just, look, he's living life. He's living life. He doesn't have to take bumps the way he used to. Probably surfing, right? He loves to surf. Now he gets to go back to Pro Wrestling Noah and wrestle a match there. I think he seems to be happy. Raw was a tape show this week since they were on tour in Europe, and it felt like one. The most significant thing to happen wasn't even taped that night. It was a pair of backstage segments they taped at SmackDown the previous week with Jimmy and Jey Uso, their first interaction since WrestleMania. Jimmy wanted to talk to him. Jey wanted no part of it. Now, Jimmy had told Roman Reigns on SmackDown the previous week, we need help, because they're getting outnumbered by Solo's bloodline every week, and they need help. And Roman was not on board with the idea. He said no yeet. But Jimmy showed up at Raw anyway, and nothing happened. But on SmackDown Friday night, Jey Uso crashed the show during a bloodline segment to speak to his little bro. Roman and Jimmy had not yet arrived at the building, he said, so he wanted to address Solo directly. Now, if you want to know why Jey is in the spot that he is in, all you got to do is take a look at that crowd. When he came out on Friday night, they were not expecting him to be there. You could tell. And these people went nuts for him. They were bobbing up and down. They were so happy to see Jey Uso. And Jey said he wasn't there to fight. He still cares about Solo because he's his little brother. And Solo didn't like being called little brother. Jey's issue was that Solo is driving their family apart, And the Ulafala, he said, is not taken, it's earned. And if Solo wants that power, take it without dividing the family. And Solo said he'll always have a place for Jay in his bloodline so long as he acknowledges him. You're either in or you're out. And Jay took issue with him bringing in the others. He goes, why them? Why did you have to bring them in? And then he looked at Jacob and he said, there's a reason why we stayed away from him. And I like that line because it makes Jacob Fatu look like a psycho. Like he's too dangerous and unpredictable even for them. And then the line about how if Jacob keeps staring at him like that, he's going to knock his ass out. The crowd popped for that. He said the next time he sees Solo, it's going to be different. I thought it was a really good segment, even though it was weird how Jay sort of, he blew off Jimmy on Monday and just wanted to be left alone, but then he just showed up on the show on Friday. So what I think we just saw was Jey Uso just cost himself the Intercontinental Championship tomorrow night in his rematch with Bron Breakker. I mean, there's your out for not having Breakker lose clean to Jey twice in a row. Jey pulled their punk card. Now there's got to be retribution. They cost him the title tomorrow. Now Jey has a real reason to be brought into this story and want a team with Roman and Jimmy against Solo's crew at Survivor Series. Now, later on in the back, when Roman and Jimmy pulled up to the building, Jay actually looked just as excited to see Jimmy as Jimmy was to see him. But then he looked at Roman and his demeanor completely changed. And again, it was weird seeing Jay's reaction to Jimmy on Monday compared to here. But he went to go walk away. Roman grabbed him by the arm and he told him he was proud of him. They all are. Jay told him no yeet and he walked away. So it's going to take a little bit longer to mend fences with those two, as it should. But the bloodline costing Jay his title tomorrow night, that would go a long way towards speeding up the process. And then they just have to round things out with Sami Zayn and Paul Heyman, and they'll have the OG crew back together. Lash Legend was back this week on SmackDown for a singles match with Piper Niven, and she got a little bit more time to show what she can do than she did in her tag team match against Bianca and Jade. The crowd did not have much reason to be invested in any of this, but I thought she got over pretty well with her power moves. And her finish got over, you know, where she got Piper on her back, almost in like a kind of like a reverse Samoan drop position, and then dropped her. I don't know if this is meant to be a permanent call-up for her and Jakara Jackson, but I can see Lash getting over well with her power, not unlike Jade. You know, Jade Cargill, she gets the hot tag in every single match that she's in, and she uses her power to pop the crowd. They follow the same formula every single match, and it works, and she's a great athlete. So is Lash. You know, she played college basketball. She even played a few games in the WNBA. I think it was like three, but, you know, she was a great college athlete. She beat Bianca Belair's gym record at the PC. I think it was for ball tossing, which all right, you know, sounds dirty, but I'm almost positive it was ball tossing. She's crazy strong. I'll never forget that time she body slammed Otis on NXT. You know, it's one thing if Otis, he comes running in, you know, in his momentum, he's kind of helping her, but she held him in the fucking air before she slammed him. And I remember watching that thinking, are you kidding me? Like, if she ever does that on Raw or SmackDown, that place is going to come unglued. She'll be over instantly. She still needs time to develop, but it's not hard to tell that if she puts it all together, she could be a big star for them. They had two triple threat matches to decide which teams would face each other next week for the right to challenge the Bloodline for the tag team titles. DIY beat out the Street Profits and Pretty Deadly in one match. And in the other, we had the debut of the Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, with a win over Los Garza and A-Town Down Under. Now, they spoiled the reveal on social media earlier in the day by posting a segment with Sabin and Shelley meeting with Nick Aldis to sign their contracts. And on commentary, even like I think in the commercial break or right before the commercial break before the match, they were openly just talking about how the Motor City Machine Guns are coming up next, you know, here on SmackDown. That was strange, you know, for them to air a couple of weeks worth of cryptic vignettes teasing a debut without spoiling who it is. And even Aldis last week, he said, oh, I've got a tag team in mind to wrestle Los Garza, a new team that we haven't seen before. But he didn't tell us who. And then casually just telling us who, like, 5 hours before the show. So that was weird. I didn't think it was a big deal. Yeah, there's no reason to get pissy over it. They probably figured they're not well-known enough to their audience to make a difference one way or the other. And they're probably right. It's like when Aldis debuted on SmackDown. He didn't even get an entrance. Nick Aldis, he just appeared at ringside. The camera cut over, and look who's walking up the steps. Right? Triple H was in the ring, and Nick Aldis walks into the ring, and that was the way they handled his debut. Now, think about that as compared to, say, the Viking Raiders, who are known to their audience, and they have been gone for months. So we got cryptic vignettes for them the last few weeks on TV, and they gave them the surprise return on Monday night without spoiling it. It's just how they operate. It's how they think. They can save the surprise for someone their fans already know. Their fans don't know who the Machine Guns are, which was pretty obvious by the reaction they got when they walked out. I mean, some people knew, but the vast majority of the people didn't either know or they didn't care. Hardly a holy shit moment for that live crowd. They did give them some pyro for their entrance, their music. I'm not a fan. They didn't have a real chance to show off what they can truly do here. It was a triple threat. There was a lot of traffic. I think that's going to come this week because on Friday, they are going to wrestle Gargano and Ciampa in a number one contenders match. And that is going to be one hell of a match. And that is going to be a much better showcase, I think, for the Machine Guns. It's, you know, as I think about where this goes and what happens on Friday, it's hard for me to imagine them losing, which means that they're setting up, I think, for the Machine Guns to challenge Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. All the more reason to expect them to cost Jey Uso the Intercontinental title tomorrow night. Then Jey can come right back and cost them, right, cost the Bloodline their tag team titles, tit for tat. And they don't waste any time putting the titles on the Machine Guns. We've got new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And even if they don't do it that way, look, I'm happy for those guys. Okay, it took them 18 years to do it, but they've got the biggest platform they've ever had now to go out there and show the world what they can do. And on top of that, even better, SmackDown gets a veteran tag team added to the division, and they desperately need more of those. Cody Rhodes was on the show. He came out and cut a promo with the Crown Jewel Championship on a pedestal in the ring. I hated this. I hated the Cody Rhodes promo almost as much as I hate this whole champion against champion concept for Crown Jewel. This is what I feared, you know, where the build feels more like, okay, let's just get this over with so we can focus on Survivor Series more than anything that really feels meaningful. And I think in recent years, they've done a much better job of making these Saudi shows feel more meaningful. But this is what I feared. You know, he came out and what did he talk about? He talked about taking the John Cena schedule when he came back to the company. And I even added to it and I paid the price. I guess because he's on the road so much that he's away from his family, I think. I don't know what he was going for here exactly, but he basically cited his daughter as the reason that he has to win the Crown Jewel title. And then he invited Gunther to come to SmackDown next week to explain his reasons. Why do you think that you should be the Crown Jewel champion? Why do you want to be the Crown Jewel champion? Please. Seriously. This is how they're promoting next week's face-off between the two of them. I don't give a shit. We already had one face-off between them on Raw. Now we're going to have another one that isn't going to lead to anything important anyway. This was easily the most boring and, I think, needlessly meandering promo from Cody so far. He already has the most important championship in the entire company over his shoulder. I can't bring myself to care about this. I mean, the match will be good, but I just can't bring myself to care about this. This week, they were more open to airing footage of the Kevin Owens stuff instead of just trying to hide it. They aired the footage of his attack on Cody after Bad Blood. And then Owens crashing the show last week and being knocked down by Randy Orton. Then they aired a video that Owens sent in explaining his actions. And he said that he's been here for 10 years. And he has had a lot of ups and downs in those 10 years. But things right now might be the lowest of his career. He's been told to stay home because of what he did. And that's unfair. Look at what this company has allowed on their television show in the past. And for some reason, he's the one who's told to stay away. Why? Because he dropped their golden boy outside of his stupid bus? You know, he keeps saying this stuff. He's going to turn himself babyface and turn Cody heel. Said the whole ordeal makes him wonder how much he is truly valued by WWE. And he could deal with that, but Randy Orton siding against him is something that he cannot deal with. He can't deal with the fact that Randy chose Cody over him. He would have never done that to Randy. He thought what they had was different. And with everything going on, he isn't sure when or if he'll be back. So from that, they aired a segment with Randy Orton asking Nick Aldis for a match with Owens at Crown Jewel. And Aldis said, I can't do it. And Orton was angry about it, and Aldis tried to explain to him, it's not that I wouldn't do it, I can't do it. This is coming from up above. And Orton understood, and he said he knows then who he needs to go talk to, implying Triple H without actually saying it. Triple H is the one who tweeted after Bad Blood that this was a matter they were going to handle internally after Owens, you know, attacked Cody. So that should be a very interesting interaction. I still don't think we get the match between Orton and Owens at Crown Jewel, though. I think they're going to hold off a little bit longer on that. Nia Jax was forced to team with Candice LeRae, who stepped in to volunteer since Tiffany Stratton was home, according to Nia, with the sniffles, taking on Bayley and Naomi. They have not done a damn thing with Candice LeRae on television since they dropped whatever the hell that angle was with her and Nikki Cross. That was like ages ago. Remember that whole thing where Nikki was like stalking her or was catatonic and wouldn't speak? And then it just got dropped, probably because it was fucking terrible. But all of a sudden, Candice is the women's speed champion on their little Twitter show that they have with 3-minute matches. We get 3-minute matches on SmackDown every week. She should be allowed to defend her title on that show too. And Candice got the win. For her team, Indy Hartwell was outside. She sent Bayley into the ring post. Referee didn't see it. Candice nailed Bayley with a springboard moonsault and pinned her. And then she had that aw shucks look on her face after when Nia was looking up at her. If they're setting her up, and I don't know if this is what they're doing, if they're setting her up to be Nia's new sidekick after Stratton cashes in her money in the bank, I would be fine with that. I think Candice is overdue for a push anyway. I mean, with the right role, I think that could work for her and for Indy as well. Candice is one of those things where when she was part of the Way and they actually had her doing stuff in NXT, she was entertaining. So you have this woman, she's under contract. And like I said, they just put the speed title on her, so they have her wrestling on Twitter. It's like you have her, and I don't know why it's taken this long for them to try to come up with something meaningful for her. Yeah, that's why I'm in support of the idea, because Tiffany is better than this, and she's going to cash in eventually, and she's going to win the title, and she's going to move on. And if they still want Nia to have a sidekick, or even have a little trio going, I'm okay with that. And I think that Candice would probably be a good fit for that spot. And then they ended the show with what else? The Bloodline, and Roman Reigns confronting Solo Sikoa in the ring. Roman wants to put the family back together. What can I do to fix things? Tell me. And Solo says, all you got to do is acknowledge me. And so Roman does. He says, I acknowledge you. There, you happy? And Solo says, that's not good enough. Acknowledge me as your tribal chief, or else. I love how this fucking guy, he stands there and he goes, or else, or else. He's lost every important match he's had in the last 3 months, or else. That's when Roman snapped at him. He goes, or else what? And Solo laughed and he says, that's the Roman Reigns that I knew was still there. You haven't changed at all. And he snaps his fingers and out comes Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, dragging Jimmy Uso's dead body out on stage with them. So they hit the ring. Roman ended up taking out each member of the Great Value Bloodline. He spotted the Ulafala on the mat, picked it up, placed it around his neck, but then Solo low-blowed him, and they took it away from him. And they left Roman laying after a beating. And that's how the show went off the air. So rinse, repeat. You've seen this all before. Solo stands tall, finger in the air. It's all part of the build to War Games and the eventual OG Bloodline reunion, but Like, if you look at this show, like, in a vacuum, if you just judge it as a show, it's the same boring ending that we have seen a million times this year, where the bloodline lays out Roman or they lay out some other person and they stand tall. And, you know, heat is one thing, but you do get to a point, and I'm not saying they don't have any heat with the audience, but you just get to a point where it just gets very dull. Like, you could just objectively watch the show and go, this is fucking boring. Like, we got to change it up in some way. But you can see where things are headed. Like, there's a light at the end of that dark tunnel. Jay had already left the building, and so he, and even if he was still there, right, he's not about to come out and help Roman Reigns. I really think they need to cost him that title tomorrow night and have that be the impetus for him being open to a reconciliation. They need to take something away from Jey Uso, something near and dear to his heart. He made it his mission this year to be a singles champion for the first time, and he finally achieved that. And the first thing he did the week after he won that belt, he stood in the ring and he dedicated that win to his mother. So to have these guys take it away from him, only a few weeks after he won it, it would give him a great reason to step up and put aside whatever his issues are that he has with his cousin and with his brother and unite for a common cause. And I think that's what's going to happen. I thought it was a decent episode. It wasn't great. You know, if there was one really good match or two to go with the storytelling stuff, I'd have liked it more. There just wasn't a whole lot going on. Even like the Machine Guns match, it was fine, but it wasn't anything great. I just wish it had some more on that side. But it looks like we're getting that this Friday. They're going to have Game 7. They're billing it as Game 7 between Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. And we have LA Knight as the special guest referee. And the Motor City Machine Guns are going to be taking on DIY in a number one contenders match. So, on paper, going into this Friday, this looks like a very good show. Let's hope it ends up that way. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Halloween is right around the corner, my favorite holiday of the year. People like being scared on Halloween. But what about those things that scare us that don't involve zombies and ghosts? We're all afraid of something. You know, me, I'm afraid of heights. I've even been on those open elevators where you could look outside and my palms get all sweaty the higher up we go. I've climbed a step stool in my house to change a light bulb and I get a pit in my stomach. But others, it could be something even more serious than that. Therapy is a great tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them, because sometimes the scariest thing is not facing your fears in the first place. Therapy can improve your life in some pretty dramatic ways, whether it's helping you be more productive in your day-to-day life or dealing head-on with some serious trauma that you may have experienced. Therapy can help teach you new ways to cope with or even overcome the things that may be holding you back from being the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be flexible enough to fit into your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and know that you can switch therapists at any time for any reason and do so at no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/Solomonster. On the AEW side, Tony Storm was supposed to debut for CMLL on October 11th, but travel was a nightmare due to Hurricane Milton and she wasn't able to make it. So they rescheduled things for Friday night at Arena Mexico, and she debuted against La Catalina, and Catalina beat her clean with a splash off the top rope, which surprised me. But she also lost to Mayu Iwatani at the Stardom show a few weeks ago. So she is now in a position where she has lost her last three singles matches, including her loss to Mariah May at All In. She's got a losing streak going. But hat tip to whoever does the photo editing for the CMLL social media, because they posted photos of her match on their Instagram page. And in every photo from her match, they turned off the color filter so that Tony was in black and white. Everything else was in color. But Tony Storm was in black and white in every single photo. I have no idea how AEW didn't think to do that first. But that was pretty fucking cool. After a strong WrestleDream show last weekend, I thought the follow-up on Dynamite this week was pretty weak. outside of a really good debut for Shelton Benjamin against Leo Rush. I just thought Benjamin looked like an absolute monster out there, just mauling his prey. This Wednesday, he's going to be wrestling Sammy Guevara, who asked Tony Khan. They had a whole video about it last night. He asked Tony Khan for the match because he met Shelton when he was younger, and they even included a photo of them. This was back in the days when Shelton had the, I guess he was probably the gold standard at that point. He had like the blonde hair. So they included that photo in there. And he was a big fan of Shelton's, and also because he wants to fight the best. So Tony made the match. So he's going to be wrestling Sammy Guevara this Wednesday, and then the following week, Benjamin has a match scheduled with Swerve Strickland. And I like that he's being consistently featured on this show. Is this going to last after he loses, or if he loses to Swerve? Maybe not. I shouldn't even say he's definitely going to lose to Swerve, because that could be the night that Bobby Lashley debuts. And maybe he helps Benjamin win, or there's a no contest. Because we know Lashley is going to be coming in. It's just a matter of when. Do they hold him off for full gear? Does he debut on that October 30th show? I'm going to guess on the 30th. But that's going to be 3 weeks in a row of matches for Shelton Benjamin on Dynamite. And that's how you establish somebody. So I don't know. You know, this is going to be a different match, obviously, with Sammy Guevara this week. Sammy Guevara has been in AEW for a long time. He's one half of the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions right now. This is not going to be a squash. It's going to be a more competitive match than the match was on Wednesday. But again, I thought Wednesday really did a good job of setting him up as somebody who goes in there and can smash you. This Wednesday should be more of a competitive, probably a flashier match, and he'll win. And then he gets, you know, he gets the big dog after that. He gets Swerve Strickland, and we'll see what they do with the finish there. But it's very early. So far, so good with Shelton. I like what they've done with him. What they did not do a good job of, I thought they actually did a very poor job, was in following up on the fact that Bryan Danielson, one of the biggest stars in the history of the company, just lost the AEW World Championship, which ended his full-time career with his loss to Jon Moxley last weekend. That aspect of the story was virtually ignored on Wednesday. And it should have been made out to be so much of a bigger deal than it was, with the idea that, you know, because of his neck issues, which they've been documenting all year and are very real, we may never see him again. Not only is it the end of his full-time career, there is the chance, there is the possibility, the very real possibility that we may never see Bryan Danielson in the ring again, especially after this heinous attack at the hands of the Blackpool Combat Club last Saturday. Throw out a video package for him. Put all of his big highlights on there with some sad music. Cut to the announcers. Have them thank Danielson for all that he's given to the business and all that he's given to AEW. Like, really play it up. Like, this may be the end for him. That should have been the biggest fucking story coming out of WrestleDream. And I just thought they just completely dropped the ball on making it feel like a much bigger deal. Now, on the Danielson front, the hope right now is that he will not need surgery, and he can heal up his neck with stem cell therapy. If that doesn't work, he's going to have to go under the knife, and there's no telling when or if he'll be able to wrestle again. I was even waiting to see, okay, they didn't do anything on Dynamite, which was a misfire. Maybe they'll do something on Collision, and they didn't. They basically glossed over what should have been their biggest story of the week. But they're very heel-heavy right now. Every AEW champion is a heel. Every single one. Jon Moxley, heel. Jack Perry, heel. Okada, heel. The Young Bucks, heels. Takeshita, heel. Mariah May, heel. Mercedes Moné, heel. But they appear to be trying to build a crew of young baby faces to take those titles, some of those titles, down the line. Orange Cassidy is clearly being primed to challenge Jon Moxley for the world title based on the segment they did even at WrestleDream. Remember the backstage segment? Orange Cassidy was there, and he was confronted by Jerry Lynn, who told him that, you know, if you really tried, you could be the man in AEW. Orange Cassidy, he may be a star in AEW, but he will not be the man. But it's nice of Jerry Lynn to kind of give him those words of encouragement. But then on Collision last night, there was a backstage segment with Daniel Garcia and Private Party after their win, where Cassidy was with them. And Garcia pointed out, you know, you hold wins over each member of the Blackpool Combat Club. which is true. Even Moxley, he beat him at All Out last year. And he said, you know, they want Cassidy to help lead the charge against the BCC. And Cassidy, he just was like, that's not me. Every time I wrestled those guys, it changed me. And I don't think I'm a leader. I'm not your guy. And then later on, when Moxley's crew is laying a beatdown on the Dark Order after their trios title defense, the babyfaces came out to chase them away. And Cassidy, he just stood there at the foot of the aisle, at the the foot of the ramp. And he never did anything. He never actually did anything to help. And then he just turned and he left. So they're building to him eventually finding his way. And he'll be Moxley's first defense, I'm sure. And then after that, I assume they're going to go with Darby Allin, who I could see being the one to take the title from Moxley. Daniel Garcia, he should be the one to beat Jack Perry for the TNT title. Private Party, who got beat at WrestleDream, are still in the mix. They have a chance. There's a chance, however slim it may be, that they will eventually take those tag team titles from the Bucks. And if they don't, I would love to see the Outrunners do it, although they got beat last night. I don't know why you would do that, but... So, I mean, it's not the worst idea to try to make stars out of these guys and put them in positions to try to get them over as stars. But right now, a lot of them are not stars. I don't know if enough fans will ever see them as stars on the level of someone who can actually move the needle for them. How many times have we seen an ex-WWE guy, right? CM Punk was probably the biggest, where all this fanfare that they're bringing in this big name who used to work somewhere else, and they make a splash initially. Punk was the one who made the biggest splash of anybody. I mean, you could think of Adam Copeland and you know, Lashley's coming in soon, probably. But nobody made or will make the kind of splash that Punk made. That was a very unique situation. Punk was a very big star for a long time, and he left. And he was gone for 7 years. So him coming back, it's not like he walked off of WWE television and just went to the other company. Like, it was a big deal when he came back. And not everybody is going to be a star at that level. But so many of these guys that Tony Khan has brought in, there's something different about them because they had exposure on television in the other company, the bigger company, for so many years. And I just don't see any of these, I'm sorry, I just don't see any of these guys that we're talking about here. I don't see the fans buying into them in the same way or on the same level as many of those names. Doesn't mean that Tony Khan can't try. He should just throw his hands in the air. Okay, well, then I guess I can't create any new stars. But you just got to find the right people for it. And I don't know that he's necessarily working with all the right people here with this idea. They have a lot of work to do if they want people like me to buy into the idea that these men can be the saviors of AEW and rescue the promotion from this hostile takeover. They had guys out there on Wednesday like Top Flight and the Dork Order, you know, taking up the cause and talking tough. It's like... Yeah, but then they blew through them on Collision last night, which I was happy to see. I didn't know how long they were going to, you know, try to convince us that these guys were actually going to step up and do anything. They blew through them on Collision. So hopefully that's the end of that. I don't want to see the Dark Order involved in this beyond what we saw last night. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But what they're doing here, I mean, they're essentially running the same angle with the BCC right now that they tried with the Elite. And that was only a few months ago. It's not even like, oh, you know, they tried an angle like this 2 years ago, and now they're doing something similar. No, they did it this year. And on Dynamite Wednesday, the Elite, they were standing out there on the ramp while all of the AEW guys were getting their asses kicked in the ring. And they're just watching, and they're not lifting a finger to help. Not because the two groups are in cahoots, but my thought was, and I'm not a fan, let me just say, I'm not a fan of this idea. But I put this out there on Wednesday, and I'll put it out there to you now. What if the idea, or part of the idea, is to build to the Elite being the saviors of the company and coming to the aid of Team AEW? Like a babyface turn for the Elite. I don't want to see that, but that thought did occur to me watching the show. Because the Elite stuff is clearly leading somewhere. I mean, they focused on them. They were standing there. They weren't doing anything. They were like cowards. But I could see, you know, 2-3 months down the road, oh boy, you know, the Bucks and all of them, they've had a change of heart and they have to step up to help the cause. And it's like, I don't think I could stomach that. You know, after months of the Bucks and their pals doing their phony little power grab, which doesn't really have much teeth to it to begin with, when you know that, and they've established this on television, that Tony Khan is just sitting back there behind the curtain. If now all of a sudden I'm supposed to root for the elite because they've turned into the great defenders of AEW. So I put it out there. I hope there's nothing to it. But just mulling over potential directions for this story in my head, that would be at the bottom of the pile. That would be my least favorite. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention here, and then we'll get into your questions. There were also people calling the triple threat match at WrestleDream last weekend the greatest three-way match in wrestling history. I even saw Meltzer mention that in The Observer. I thought it was the best match of the weekend. Best three-way match ever. You know, with the benefit of hindsight in a few years, ask me again. Maybe I'll feel differently. But as great as it was, no, it is not the best triple threat that I have ever seen. And it's a subjective thing anyway. But would I say that it was better than last year's WrestleMania with Gunther and Sheamus and Drew McIntyre? You know, it had flashier moves and acrobatics, but no, I don't think I would. There have been too many great triple threats that I loved for me to say for sure where I would rank this one. I don't think it would be at the top. Yeah, you've got WrestleMania 30. You've got the Royal Rumble in 2015 with Cena and Rollins and Lesnar. And Vengeance 2002, Rock and Undertaker and Kurt Angle. Even the Breakdown in Your House one from 98 in the cage, the blue cage, with Rock and Mankind and Ken Shamrock. That holds a special place for me. It may not be the best, but that's a damn fun match. I think a lot of people, I don't want to say most, I think a lot of people are going to have that unbreakable 2005 match with AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Christopher Daniels kind of grandfathered in there as the best three-way ever. Also because it was just such an influential match for so many wrestlers. It's grandfathered in there the way that the 92 Royal Rumble match is for me. So my guess would be most people at the top of their list, they probably would have that match. All right, let's get into your questions. I haven't had the chance to do a mailbag here the last few weeks. So between the 2 hours of Q&A I did the other day for channel members, and now this, at least we're getting back to some good questions here. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send your questions. Vincent says, I found your show a little bit after WrestleMania season, and I have been hooked ever since. You've gained a new lifelong supporter. Thank you, Vincent. I appreciate that. This Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes rivalry has been money ever since it kicked off, but it leaves me thinking about one interesting question. If Cody teaming with Roman made KO turn heel, what will be the action that sends Randy over the edge? If Randy is truly this new mature version of himself, it almost seems illogical to have him turn just because he keeps losing matches in big moments. Feels like Cody has to really hurt Randy deeply in order for the turn to truly happen. I don't know how that will happen as of yet, but I think it's the most interesting part of this whole saga that has not been mentioned yet. I will disagree with you on one thing. I don't think it's illogical at all or immature to have Randy eventually snap if he keeps losing matches, because winning and losing should be a big deal. And for somebody like Randy Orton, who's been a 14-time world champion and has said he wants to be a 15-time world champion, winning and losing is very important. And when you are somebody like Randy Orton, maybe he's a little older and a little calmer and a little more mature, but when you are a top guy, future Hall of Famer like Randy Orton, and you look back and you realize that this guy has not won a match on a PLE all year long. We're not talking about, oh, he's gone a few weeks and he's lost a few matches. Like, he's come out a loser all year. There will come a point, there has to come a point where it affects him. And if he doesn't turn heel just because of that, it's definitely going to play into, I think, an eventual heel turn. It should. It has to. So, I mean, as far as what will send him over the edge, how would I kind of work this or book this? I don't think that you have to have Randy turn first and then do the first match with him and Cody. I think that you could build to an initial face versus face match between them. whether it's one-on-one, whether it's a triple threat with Owens involved, which could very well be the Survivor Series match. But I think you could do Randy and Cody in the ring together, both as babyfaces initially, and have Randy lose there. And maybe that ends up being the catalyst for him just dropping him with an RKO out of nowhere. Maybe Randy goes to Cody and says, look, I remember a few months ago, Bash in Berlin, you were the one who went to bat for Kevin Owens and said you wanted to defend your championship against KO. And Randy wants the same opportunity, right? You did it for KO. You see how things turned out. It sucks. You know, I just want you to know I'm with you. I got your back. You and I were still cool. We got history. We know each other well. But he wants a shot too, which only makes sense if you think about it, because why would he gift Owens a world title match and not Randy Orton, even though Randy Orton, again, he's been a loser all year. But clearly all Cody Rhodes has to do is go to Nick Aldis and say, make the match, right? So you can set it up that way. And Cody says, Randy, of course, I have nothing but respect for you. You're the Viper, right? You're the 14-time world champion. You and I were very good friends. You've had my back. I've had yours. And he gifts him a world championship match. I mean, hell, you could do the match on Saturday night's main event or something. And then you could shoot the angle there, or shoot the angle coming out of that match when Cody wins. That could be part of what sends Randy Orton over the edge finally. Not only losing again, but losing his shot to be the world champion and being beat by Cody. And then he could drop him, and then you can go from there. You know, or you could do it a completely different way and you can have Randy beat Cody to win the championship, but maybe do it in such a way where he takes a shortcut, he cheats. You know, there's a few different ways you can go with this that I think would be pretty interesting. But yeah, I don't think that first match between them has to be face against heel. Oh, Randy turned and now they're going to have a match. In fact, I might do it the other way. I think I like that better. But yeah, don't forget that it was Cody who was the one who gifted Owens the title shot at Bash in Berlin. And so if I'm Randy Orton, I'm thinking to myself, hey, what about me? You know, he's good enough for one, but I'm not. And then you just sort of go from there. Owen from Ireland, with clear indications that WWE is building towards a Bloodline versus Bloodline match at Survivor Series, where do you think Hikuleo might fit in there? I'd like to see him introduced as a masked Samoan monster. Well, that's going to be awfully hard. I mean, as much as I would love a masked Samoan monster, he's Tongan. So a masked Tongan monster, that works too. But I feel like unless you're a luchador, they don't like masks these days in WWE. They want you to be expressive with your face. So I don't think we're going to get a mask on him. I still think the best way to do it is to have the new Bloodline eventually turn on Solo and kick him to the curb, right? Another loser. Kick him to the curb. Losing has consequences. Have Jacob Fatu take over and let Jacob lead the Tongan crew. He could lead Tama, Tongaloa, and Hikuleo. David from Sacramento, California. When Roman returned after his loss at WrestleMania, he still had and has the same entitled attitude. He still keeps that attitude that this is his WWE. We've now had promos with Cody and Jimmy Uso calling him out that everything that was his is not his anymore. Do you feel at some point Roman is going to have to cut a promo and acknowledge that everything is his fault? He manipulated his family. He had them as a dominant force that gave him certain victory with tribal rules on night two of WrestleMania, but it was his selfish choice that led to his loss. He was the one who created the monster and appointed Solo next in line. And in doing so, many have created a worse, he has created a worse monster now that we have in Jacob Fatu in WWE. What are your thoughts? Everything you just said is true. You could all trace it back to Roman Reigns and the decisions that he made. You know, he was power hungry. He was selfish. Power corrupts. And I think that when we get the promo segment in these next several weeks where Jey Uso comes around, because there's going to have to be a reconciliation. There's going to have to be a meeting of the minds with him and Roman. There's going to have to be a peace that's brokered. And I think that exactly what you said is something that should happen. I think Roman is going to have to admit that he was wrong, and he's going to have to apologize and say, this is all my fault. right? He was the tribal chief. He was the one calling the shots and making all these decisions. And yeah, his decisions are what have led to Solo having his group, Jacob being brought in because Solo's the one who brought him in. So yeah, everything you said is right. And I think that is something we're going to have to see. Javon from the Bronx, I was thinking when Randy Orton and Cody start their feud, what if Orton makes a new group that consists of Zilla Fatu and Ricky Starks? Fatu can join with Orton as him and his father were very close with each other and will represent the legacy aspect of the group. And with Starks can represent the evolution side of Orton's new faction. What do you think? I think that you've just created the most random faction that I've heard in a long time. Randy Orton with Zilla Fatu and Ricky Starks. I am not a fan of that idea, so I wouldn't do it. But I give you points for creativity. I mean, I could see where you're coming from as far as the legacy aspect on one hand and the evolution aspect on the other. But yeah, I don't think so. Not with that group. And also the other thing I'll throw in there, and I say this as somebody who has called a lot of Zilla matches in the last few months, and I've gotten to see him in the ring in person. Zilla will get there. Zilla, though, being thrown directly on WWE television, it's not the right move. I just don't think the time is right for that. I think people sometimes forget that Zilla Fatu, I think, only has 20-something matches in his career. Maybe 30 matches at this point. He's had, what, a year and a half in the business? And people are rushing him up to television. Like, you could see the signs are all there that he could be a big star. But to throw him into something right now on TV and WWE, I think would be too soon. Brett from Hicksville, Ohio. How would you book Tiffany's Money in the Bank cash in? I would like to see her hold the briefcase until Charlotte returns and takes the belt. If they wanted to get long-term, build to a match between them and maybe try to do a double turn with Tiffany going face and Charlotte heel. Probably not going to happen, but this would give Tiffany something to do at WrestleMania. I think Tiffany will have something to do at WrestleMania without having to do a double turn. It's inevitable that Charlotte is going to be right back in the title picture when she comes back, which could be any week now. Charlotte against Nia Jax, queen versus queen, it's going to happen. I say let Tiffany cash in during the match and pin Charlotte to win the title, and then they can do Charlotte against Tiffany straight up, one-on-one at WrestleMania next year. Carlos from New York, with the current setup of the Raw Women's Division looking like Rhea Ripley will get the belt back from Liv Morgan. Once Rhea gets the belt back, does that open the division up for people like Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark, Io Sky, etc., to be built as legit title contenders, maybe rebuilding the division to where the champion is seen as a serious final boss type, moving away from the runaway heel trope? I mean, we already had that for a year with Rhea Ripley. Liv Morgan is a different type of champion. But we had Rhea as effectively the final boss of that division for a year. Let's not pretend like we didn't already have that. As for SmackDown, do you think that the division will benefit more from having someone like a Mia Yim or a Candice LeRae, people who are known for their in-ring skill, at the top of the division? No, because Mia Yim and Candice LeRae, I mean, all due respect to the two of them, they're not someone that I would be building that division around as the top star. They're not a top star in the way that a Rhea Ripley is, or in the way that a Charlotte Flair is. I think that they are, you know, mechanically they're good, and I think they have a place in the division. Mia Yim has gotten more television time in recent months under Triple H. Right, building to that win in the dumpster match a few weeks ago over Chelsea Green. Candice, we're finally just now seeing Candice back on TV. They are not people that I would build around as the top face or the top star of the women's division. Absolutely not. But I don't think that there is certainly any harm in getting them more TV time and building stories around them. I think that's something they should be doing. You know, as far as Raw is concerned, you mentioned Shayna and Zoe and Io. Io is super over right now. I'd even put Io on the short list of names to consider as a Royal Rumble winner. I wouldn't call her the favorite right now, but she should be in consideration for it because she's over. You know, now Damage Control has shifted over as baby faces. And the fans, they react to Io. They like Io. Io's great. So I hope so. I would love to see EO built up. Shayna and Zoe, I don't see it. I don't see it. As far as them being built up as a serious contender to potentially win the title, I don't see it. Could they build up a Zoe Stark to challenge Rhea, let's say, in a program after Rhea wins the belt back? They could. Shayna, you know what, Shayna, I feel like Shayna has her spot now, and Triple H knows the value that she has, but I don't see her ever, you know, anybody who's waiting for the old killer Shayna Baszler to come back, the one that was pushed that way in NXT, those days are done. I don't see that happening. I think she'll be a good utility player for them on the roster, and every now and then give her, you know, they may give her a push and she'll run through some people like a monster, but it'll probably be more to lose to somebody else who's on the ascent than putting her in a position where she could be the dominant champion in the division. I just think those days are done. Armando from Bayamon, Puerto Rico, as a listener for 9 years. I want to say happy birthday. Always a great listen and one of the good ones in the wrestling reviewing community. I don't always agree with you, but I know you generally come at it from a good place and you are not a dipshit. Well, that might be the nicest thing that anybody has said about me this week, that I'm not a dipshit. Thank you. With that out of the way, I was thinking about the next great wrestling movie, and it should be about Hulk Hogan, specifically an autobiographical movie where we put everything Hogan has said in it. How he almost joined Metallica, how he almost joined two different baseball teams, how he scouted Brock Lesnar, the time zone difference, Wembley, fighting in Pride, Simon Cowell, almost becoming John Wayne, Undertaker, super seriously breaking his neck, all of it, and the movie can be called Hogan, No Lies Detected. What do you think? Aside from the fact that the studio would lose its ass on the movie, sure. It would be a parody. Get Mel Brooks to make it. He's 98 years old, but so what? Phil in DC, I've listened to your show since I was in college, and I am now into my 30s, and your shows have been how I have winded down my weeks every Sunday. In regards to the career of Bryan Danielson, if you were to break his career into two bodies of work, one as Bryan Danielson and the other as Daniel Bryan, which would you say you enjoyed more? Oh, definitely his body of work is Bryan Danielson. Between the classics that he had in Ring of Honor and the classic matches he's had since leaving WWE, whether it was AEW or the Tokyo Dome, I mean, he's had so many great matches. It's such a stronger body of work than his work as Daniel Bryan. And his work as Daniel Bryan had some gems. Yeah, obviously, the whole Yes Movement stuff and WrestleMania 30. The segment where he broke away from the Wyatt family on Raw, his SummerSlam match with John Cena, his Survivor Series match with Brock Lesnar, his matches with CM Punk in 2012, I believe it was. And it's too bad we never got to see that in AEW. We got to see Punk and Joe, but we didn't get to see Punk and Bryan. So there was a lot of great stuff in there. But I don't think it matches the work that he has put in outside of the company before and after. Silvino from Las Vegas. I wanted to ask you about WrestleMania tickets. I live here in Las Vegas, and I'm hoping to go to my first and possibly one and only WrestleMania next year. You've gone to many WrestleManias in the past. What advice would you give me when it comes to paying tickets? I honestly don't want to spend two paychecks on tickets, but I'm hoping for good seats both nights. When my family and I went to SummerSlam back in 2021, we spent $676 for six people total, and the seats were good. Unfortunately, WrestleMania is a whole different beast than SummerSlam. Thank you for whenever you read this email, and thank you for the many years of entertainment. I've been a fan since 2013. Well, Silvino, I appreciate that. They are putting, just so you know, they are putting, and everybody, this goes out for everybody, they are putting two-day combo tickets on sale this coming Friday. You could sign up for the pre-sale right now. I have no idea what those prices are going to look like. I'm almost afraid to look. But I am sure they are going to be insane. You know, when I went to all those WrestleManias, tickets weren't cheap. I don't want to make it sound like it was a cheap trip, but it was so many years ago, I just can't imagine the prices for decent seats are even going to be comparable. I mean, everything is just so much more expensive now. It's supply and demand. They know they can get away with charging elevated prices, so as long as people are willing to pay them, they're going to keep charging. As long as they can keep selling out and selling or setting gate records, they're going to keep doing it. So I don't know what your paycheck looks like, but if you're planning on going, that what you said, six people. If you're planning on going with your family and you said six tickets is what you got for SummerSlam. I mean, for six tickets, there's no way you're not going to pay through the nose for anything more than nosebleeds. I mean, you said you want decent seats. Decent seats, six people for WrestleMania? Yeah. You may be spending more than two paychecks. So my advice to you is if you want to attend both nights, go sign up for the presale and go check out the combo tickets on Friday and you'll get a sense of what they're going for. They haven't announced yet what they're going to go for, so nobody knows. If I was going to WrestleMania, I would not be going for anything, you know, up in the nosebleeds or the 300 section. Like, I'd be going for something one or two levels up. Like, if I'm going to go to WrestleMania, I don't need ringside, but I'm getting good seats or I'm not going. And that's probably too pricey for what you're looking for. So I would check out one of the upper sections. Yeah, just see what they're going for. Factor in the taxes and the fees, because that's how they get you. They get you on the taxes and the fees, right? I always love the convenience charge. Yeah, convenient for who? Not for me. But factor all of that in and then see if you can swing it. Or maybe you only go to one night instead of two. You know, maybe that's the compromise. Prices are going to be higher now than they were when I went to WrestleMania. The last time I went to WrestleMania was 2019 when they were at MetLife. The product now is just so much hotter than it was back then, and it's under new ownership. And this is, you know, when it comes to tickets, this is the way they operate. As long as the product is hot, I don't see it slowing down. Tori from Atlanta, Georgia. What are your thoughts about the career of Sheamus? He seems to be left out of the conversation of one of the all-time greats. He has been part of WWE for almost 20 years, never been majorly hurt during his career, and seemingly well-liked backstage. What are your favorite matches of his career, and what do you think his legacy will ultimately be? I think that Sheamus is going to be someone who we probably look back on and realize that I don't think he was appreciated as much as he should have been. And especially, you know, since he came back, because he was gone for a while, but since he came back, he has been as consistent a performer as anybody on that roster. Like, he goes out there and has these TV matches, and it's mostly TV matches. He goes out there and he has these matches, and they're always really good, and they're really fun. And you could kind of carve up his career into different eras. You had the initial one when he came in, and then there was the King of the Ring with the fucking antlers, and there was the Bar when he was teamed up with Cesaro. I mean, there were a bunch of different Sheamus eras. I don't know which one is my favorite, but I think that everybody's going to be a Hall of Famer, but if we judge this as more of a real Hall of Fame, right? He's got the credentials. He's a legitimate Hall of Famer. And that's not in question. Is he one of the all-time greats? What do you mean when you say all-time greats? Are you like top 10, top 20? Because the answer is no. But is he an all-time great performer? Yeah. He's just not going to be ranked, you know, like in the top 20 or 30. Not for me, maybe for you. But I don't see him like he's not someone who I think is going to be on that level when you're talking about people like, you know, a Roddy Piper or a Kurt Angle or a Bret Hart or a Shawn Michaels, you know, Undertaker, people like that who are at that elevated level. Sheamus has been a main eventer at times, but I mean, like, he's a main eventer all the time. He's in that rarefied air, the air that Roman and Cody are in right now. Like, that's not where Sheamus is. He's like one rung below that. And I just don't think when you factor in work and promos and stories they've been involved in and their significance to the company, he's not an all-time great in the top 20 or 30 like that. But I think he'll go down as one of the all-time greats. His body of work speaks for itself, right? He's had great matches. He's won championships. He's faced all the big names. He's been a consistent performer for them. He's also, I kind of look at him as like a utility guy that they can use and plug into whatever role they need him for, whether it's as a babyface or a heel. And we've seen him plugged into tag teams, and we've seen him working with lower-level guys and working with top guys. I'm surprised we never got a Sheamus Roman Reigns match when Roman was on that run as champion. Sheamus and Lashley and AJ. Surprised we never got those matches in those 4 years. So I like Sheamus, but I don't like him so much that I would put him in my, you know, top list of performers. As far as his best matches, I'll throw three of them at you. And these may be his best three in whatever order you want to put them in. But the triple threat at WrestleMania last year with him and Gunther and Drew, the singles match with Gunther for the Intercontinental title at Clash at the Castle in 2022, which I think I had that as my WWE match of the year that year, and the Extreme Rules match that he had in 2012 with Daniel Bryan. I think it was 2 out of 3 falls. It was the month after the, or maybe it was later the same month, whatever. It was the pay-per-view after the WrestleMania where he beat Bryan in 28 seconds. Or not 28 seconds, 18 seconds. And then they had this 2 out of 3 falls match at Extreme Rules that was, look, any match they were going to have was going to be better than fucking 18 seconds, but it was like a legitimately great match. Those are the three that stand out to me. He's had great matches with a lot of different people in this company. I'm sure there are TV matches, random TV matches I'm not even remembering. Those are the three. Simon from Coos Bay, Oregon. Do you think Brock Lesnar should win a secondary title in WWE before he retires? And if so, which title do you feel would have the most impact? I don't. So that's your answer. I don't think he needs it. I don't think he should hold a secondary title. There's nothing secondary about Brock Lesnar. Callum from Glasgow, Scotland. First time emailer, but he has been listening since episode 199. What took you so long? My God. What year was that from? 199. That had to be 2010, 2011. He says, as a fellow October 6th-er, I hope you had a great birthday, 33 years young for me. Well, happy belated birthday, Callum. There's been a lot of good, bad, and ugly over the years when it comes to catchphrases in wrestling. For some reason, Bayley's current ding dong, you idiot, really sticks in my craw, and I can't shake how much I hate it every time she says it. With that in mind, what are some of the best and worst wrestling catchphrases over the years that have stuck with you? Best catchphrases. I've got to go Steve Austin for the best and the worst. He wins the top prize for best and worst. For the best, it's, and that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so. That's just badass. The worst is, what? His single worst contribution to the wrestling business. And you know, in another 10 years when his hearing goes, if they bring him back, it's going to start all over again. Only this time he'll be legitimately asking because he won't be able to hear anybody. What? What? I love Brett's, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And I'll throw another one at you here. Not exactly a main eventer, but this one I've always been partial to. The Repo Man. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine too. I always got a kick out of that. Nothing beats what, though, for the worst catchphrase. If I had to think of one more, I'll give you one more, and I still sometimes think about this. It still lives rent-free in my head. Jim the Anvil Neidhart had an awful line from a Hart Foundation promo before they went out for their 10-man tag at Canadian Stampede, and it was actually Brett's line. I can't even blame the Anvil for it, because Brett's the one who suggested the line, but Anvil's the one who said it. He says, for the Hart Foundation, we're going to get hungry and forget our manners. And I'm like, oh, God. Feel the cringe. I think Brett got that out of a book or something. We're going to get hungry and forget our manners. It's fucking awful. Trevon from St. Louis. What are your least favorite baseball teams? Is one of them the Cardinals because of 2006? I still carry the mental scars of that 2006 postseason. But I wouldn't say the Cardinals are my least favorite. That would be the Phillies and the Braves. Anyway, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Again, always make sure you include your name and where you are from and how long you've been listening for and all that good stuff. Follow me on social media. at Solomonster on Twitter. That's where I'm the most active. And of course, on YouTube. Thank you for 82,000 subscribers. The road to 83 begins, but that can't happen without you. So if you are not subscribed, just look for Solomonster Sounds Off. You'll see 82K. That's the official channel. Make sure notifications are on, so that way when new content goes up or I go live, you should get an email notification about it. This week, I will be live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I was not live this past Friday because of House of Glory. That's why I talked about SmackDown today. But I will be live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday this week. Of course, TNT on Tuesday night. I also want to send well wishes to a very close, very dear friend of mine who's going through some stuff right now and is having surgery this week coming up. I'm thinking about you. I will be in touch with you this week. I'm sure everything will go fine. And that's all I got for you. That's episode 884. I wish there was more real big news, but it's been kind of quiet, so we do the best we can with what we got. Hopefully it'll be a busier week this week and a busier 885 next Sunday. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and I will see you back here, of course, live tomorrow night on YouTube for the Raw review and back here for 885 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Naomi made her way out to the ring. She said, if they wanted a fight, let's glow. I had a hearty laugh when she said that. Let's glow. Daddy Ugarte says, cringe alert. It was pretty bad. I get that that's her gimmick, but that's pretty bad. Let's glow. It does sound like a Vince line, doesn't it? It's not quite suffer and succotash, but that does sound like a Vince line.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good,
the bad,
and the ugly.
Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Solomonster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Solomonster.
I love you, Solo.